Well, what makes a good relationship? Well, I would suggest good conversations is one aspect that makes really good relationships. But what makes good conversations? Well, well-constructed questions in a good space.
This is episode number 597 with Topaz Adizes. We're going to be talking about how to achieve greater intimacy by asking the right questions. And I'm really excited about this conversation. Hi, everybody. I'm Sandy Weiner. Welcome back to Last First Date Radio, where we believe it is never too late to go on your last first date. And to support you, I've written two books. The first one is Becoming a Woman of Value, How to Thrive in Life and Love. And this is really a how-to book on how to have more confidence, more core confidence. Each book has stories, it has exercises to help you on your journey. And this is for people who are single or in relationships. And the second book is called Choice Points in Dating. And this book is almost 1 year old. I wrote it, it published last Valentine's Day. This book was written because so many people feel they are not a choice when it comes to dating and relationships. And I want to empower people to make healthier decisions at every stage of dating and relationships, when to stay, when to go, how to choose, all of that. You can find both of them on Amazon for Kindle or paperback. And this week's tip on becoming a woman of value is step number 4, love your body. So many of us have loathing when it comes to our bodies. And we rely on other people to give us the affirmation that our bodies are okay or not okay. And so my challenge to you, or my invitation to you, is to find a way to love your own body and not compare it to anybody else's. Because honestly, if you look at what you're grateful for, you will begin to love more than you loathe when it comes to your body. Before I bring Topaz on, just a quick invitation to join my Facebook group. It's called Your Last First Date, and we are a group for single women over 40 who are looking for a place of growth, not complaints. We are not that type of group. We are a group that really will guide you to really get unstuck when it comes to dating and relationships. So join us at Your Last First Date. And now for my guest, Topaz Adizes is an Emmy Award-winning writer, director, and experienced design architect. He's the founder and executive director of the experienced design studio, The Skin Deep. He's also the author of the book called 12 Questions for Love, A Guide to Intimate Conversations and Deeper Relationships. And he reveals how every relationship can be deepened through the 12 carefully crafted questions that are featured in his documentary series, The And. Welcome to the show, Topaz.
Hey, good to be here. Excited to be here, Sandy. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about the idea for these 12 questions. Like, where did this come from?
Well, for the last 10 years, my team and I have been holding the space for really beautiful conversations between over 1,200 different pairs of all shapes and sizes and types and expressions, everything you can imagine. We've done it in 9 countries, all across this country, the US, but all around the world for the last 10 years. And we were asked to take a distillation of what have you learned from holding the space for so many conversations? What are the questions that really work and why? Why do you think they work? And what is it about, what are the things that are required, or how, basically the editor was, you know, in 1 week in November, 2 years ago, I got 2 emails from 2 different editors who were fans of our work. And they were just saying, how are you doing this? How are you having these vulnerable conversations? How are people opening up so publicly of such intimacy? And that's what's distilled in the book. It's not this, on a prescriptive level, the book is offering, ask these 12 questions of anyone you have an intimate relationship with, not just romantic, and you will have a conversation that will forever change your relationship. But on a bigger picture, on the more macro picture, this is a toolkit. This is the blueprint for why they work. It's not necessarily about the questions. It's about the space. It's about well-constructed questions. You could take these 12 questions. You could take others. I offer more in the end of the book. It's really about how do we create these moments of deeper connection by having quality conversations.
So I'm curious, whether you grew up in a family that talked openly, did they ask questions? Were they curious?
Founding experience for me in the family sense would be a divorce at a very young age. I had a brother who's 15 months younger than I, so he and I, we were 3 and 4, and my parents got divorced, and it was quite present. It was very much a family affair. I have early memories of that. So that would be the environment I grew up in. And then on my father's side, there was more conversations, and my mom's side, it was less so. So I think I got a bit of both, you know, and I would just say that for me, I believe if I look at my life story, if you will, you know, that divorce and that yearning for connection and intimacy, which was initially painful because I didn't feel I had it when I was young, became a hunger and became a search. And now after 10 years of doing this project, I believe it's a gift. The book is a gift. The videos are a gift. And I invite all your viewers to enter the rabbit hole of the Andes on YouTube or Instagram. They'll find that we have all kinds of pairs facing each other with questions that we write for them. And we film it with 3 cameras. So you see a wide shot, and then you also see a close-up on both faces. And at minimum, we're always showing you both faces at the same time. And by doing that, we're elevating the listener to be on the same level as a speaker. Because if you think about most content that we see in social media and film and TV or anything we watch, you're always seeing the speaker, but you're not always seeing the listener. And we have, at minimum, a bipanel, 50-50 of the screen. It's half is on the speaker, half is on the listener. And what you get from that is you get a sense of their connection. It's not just the words. It's everything else, right? It's how they're reacting to each other. It's how they're holding the space for one another. And that's why it's quite a rabbit hole that people find beautiful to enter when they go and they look at these ad videos. It's all over 1,200 of them. And so my work is really informed from that experience of doing
that. Thank you for sharing a little bit about your childhood and how you grew up. I think most of us actually don't grow up in homes where people are super curious about us or really there to deepen our own personal journeys, because our parents are often people who have not yet done the work on themselves. And so I can share from my own experience as well. I grew up in a home with a lot of conflict, and both my parents were really focused on their own selves and their own pain and protecting themselves. And there was very little room left for the 4 children in the house. And so I think partially why I became a coach is because of this journey that I had growing up. You look like you wanted to say something there.
No, I find it, but your parents were not divorced, but they were still very focused on themselves and not the children. Don't you think that's also generational? Like, I feel like it's more now that parents now with how things are shifting are much more focused on the children and like empowering the children. Do you feel that shifted over time?
I think it's shifted over time. My parents ultimately did get divorced when they were married 29 years and we were all out of the house.
Oh, wow.
I begged my mother at 16 to leave my father because it was really painful being in the house and hearing them argue. Mm. I think there's 2 different things. One is, yes, I think generationally, there was less awareness about interpersonal relationships. But my parents in particular were fairly narcissistic, and my father was bipolar. You know, there were other issues on top of it. So, you know, we all have our experiences, and what we choose to do with them is really key, how we become as adults. And so I love questions. I think before we get into the 12 questions, I wanted to ask you a question about questions in general. There are people who feel really confronted by questions, they feel like it's too deep, it's too vulnerable. You said you were a little uncomfortable in the beginning. So tell us a little bit about how you create a safe space for people to answer these questions and ask these questions.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think space is really imperative. And I think we're talking about family right now. We're talking about, you know, where you were raised and I was raised. And I think one thing is, where do we learn? Where do we learn the skills and how to communicate on a deep level and explore? We basically learn that in a family. There's no schooling for that. There's no program for that. And so if if we don't bring conscientiousness to it, we do fall on the pattern that we're raised in. Right. And so what I find is that by experience of watching all these conversations, I've learned the tools of like, oh, this is how we do that. And the two things are the space and well-constructed questions. And the thing about the space is that if your partner comes to you and says, why do you love me? You're not necessarily thinking about why you love them. You're thinking why they're asking you this question while you're washing the dishes or whatever. Where does this question come from? What's the context? So we need to build context, and we don't need to make it heavy-handed. We have these card games, right? We have 12 editions of these card games that we sell globally. Just playing a card game creates a space. It doesn't have to be heavy-handed. It's like, we're going to play a game now. I'm going to pull out a question. Boom, I pull out the question, says, why do you love me? Okay. Now you're not wondering why I'm asking. You know why I'm asking, because we're playing a game, right? This creates the space. It creates permission for one to give the answer and the other one to receive. Sometimes we simply need to create the space in order to enter into something a bit more exploratory. Why do we have great conversations on long car rides? Because we kind of have a space. There's nothing else to do. You're listening to the radio, listen to an audiobook. You're looking around. You want to talk to each other. You have time. Okay, there's a space that's created. We're on a long road. Let's have a conversation. How do we create the space? Is simply by creating context and intention, because that allows for permission, right? And I don't think it necessarily has to be heavy-handed. It could be, you know, you could light candles. You could, sure. But you could also just pull out a card game and say, let's play a game. I mean, that's what's really, and then secondly is well-constructed questions. And in the context of a relationship, you know, there's five things, at least that I've seen from our work, that there's five things that make for a really better question versus, and it's not that, I don't think there's a right question or a wrong question. I just think there's better or better constructed or stronger compared to other ones, right? And we can get into like what makes a really good question in the context of a relationship. But I think those are the two things that to consider. And if you're wondering, for those who are wondering, well, why even have this conversation? I think a fundamental is, if you believe that the quality of your life is commensurate to the quality of your relationships, that's something that Esther Perel says. You hear that a lot. You know, the quality of your relationships will help determine the quality of your life. Well, what makes a good relationship? Well, I would suggest good conversations is one aspect that makes really good relationships. But what makes good conversations? Well, well-constructed questions in a good space. Explore. And that's what I'm offering people.
So let's get into what makes a good question. What's a strong question?
Well, I say there's five things in the context of relationship. And one thing we should be aware of, that we are always asking questions. When you wake up in the morning and you go, oh my God, I have that meeting today, that is an answer to a question. We're always answering questions, whether we know it or not. So focusing on the question is really helpful, because that's sending us in a certain direction. And we can get into that more. But the five things that make a really quality question in terms of relationship is, A, let's start simple. Don't make it binary. Do you love me? Yes, no, done. I think that ends a conversation quicker than yes or no, especially for those who are uncomfortable talking or not really articulate, or, you know, you it's easy to exit the conversation or to end it by just with a yes or no. So why do you love me? Yes, no. Or why do you love me? How do you love me? What does my love feel like? So don't ask a binary question. Another one is, this is really interesting, is, and this sometimes people really miss, and you see there's a lot of products out there with questions, but they miss this very simple thing that's really beautiful, is ask a question that acknowledges your relationship. So what I mean by that, if I ask you, Sandy, what are you scared of? And your best friend asks you, Sandy, what are you scared of? And the bartender says, hey, Sandy, what are you scared of? You most likely may answer, snakes. I'm scared of snakes. That scares me the most, for example. But if I ask you, what do you think we're both scared of? You're going to answer that differently if I ask you that than if your best friend asks and the bartender asks you that. The question acknowledges the connection. So ask questions that acknowledge the connection. Third is, ask questions that, because we're always asking questions, be aware of the questions you're asking, make it constructive. Why do we fight so much? You get a whole whole laundry list of why we fight so much. Why not ask instead, what's our biggest challenge right now? What do you think it's teaching us? Reshaping the question such that it's more constructive. It's going to lead you to a better place. It's more empowering because our minds are built to protect us and our hearts are built to connect us. So if you're asking questions of the mind's just going to go and race to give you answers. Why do we fight so much? I'll give you a whole laundry list, right? That's not necessarily going to leave us in a good, why am I still single? Why can't I find the love of my life? Why do they dump me? Okay. But reshape the question. This is really important. Reshape the question in a way that's constructive. I remember once I got dumped and turned down and it hurt. And I was like, oh, why did she reject me? And obviously my mind is like, okay, you just asked me. I will serve. I'm here to serve. So I will find the answer. But it says, what's the lesson in this? How is this preparing me for the next relationship? Oh, then the mind is going to go serve and it's going to find an answer. And that's more constructive. So really be ask questions that are constructive, that are directing you in a more position of agency and empowerment. Fourth is, have a question that does not have an agenda, right? If you're asking someone you're dating or being with, spending time with, why do you hate me? Or why don't you love me? Or why aren't you doing this? Then it sounds accusatory. There's an agenda there. It's almost like it's much easier to shake an open hand than to shake a hand that's got a finger pointing at you. It's really hard to offer someone to step into a space if you're coming at them. Make sure the question is offered as a gift, one from, you know, that's rooted in curiosity or in acceptance or non-judgment. Why is it that I feel you're not into me? Why is it that I have this experience? Why do you think that I feel, you know, maybe that even sounds accusatory, but reshaping the question such that it's an offering, right? And then the last is, it's really nice to connect different ideas together because it forces the mind to work and connect things that you don't want to connect. How does this conflict make us better? What's your favorite memory from your worst relationship? Right? What does earning money cost you? Asking questions that connect things that are not normally put together creates a space for exploration. And then a part of that in terms of the unexpected is just asking questions that put the other people in you or put them in other people's shoes. Sandy, what do you think is the hardest thing being your friend? So now you have to put yourself in your friend's shoes and look at yourself from that point of view. That's really nice. That's really powerful and giving you another perspective. So those are the five things that really give you an opportunity to create better constructed questions than what you normally ask. Because oftentimes we grab questions that are quite simple and we're not spending the time on better questions.
Yeah. Now these are all five of them really made me think. Uh-huh. And so the first, the non-binary questions, I think this is what I see as one of the worst ways that people connect, especially in online dating, where you're just meeting somebody who you don't know at all. So you're having a first text and I've seen people ask questions like, do you like living in Florida? You know, like,
right.
Where does that go? Yes, no, you know, and it's like, and a lot of these people who are like in sales, who really know how to start a conversation, engage people, but they get frozen when it comes to a total stranger. So just asking simple questions that are not binary is just going to open up a conversation. Acknowledging the relationship, constructive questions. I mean, you know, my daughter had a breakup a couple months ago and she keeps asking those why questions, you know, why did it happen? How did I miss it? And we keep telling her it's so clear why it happened and what you missed. And she refuses to hear, but, you know, then I will ask questions. What do you think you can take away from this? What do you think you'll do differently next time when you're starting to date somebody? And it's like, you know, a lot of times she just doesn't want to see it at this point. But sometimes it takes people a lot of something happening quite a lot of times for them to change behaviors.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Because in another episode, you mentioned also your son who was mm-hmm. dating with someone toxic, and you knew that, and he was, and I found that really interesting. And that just made me think of your audience and something that I learned over many years of dating, 20 years of dating, right? I found my partner when I was 42, who I'm now married to and have two children. Is that it's almost more important, and that maybe this will be something that you say, actually, that's bad dating advice. So I'd love to hear what you think. But for me, is that in the dating, it's actually more important how you show up. You know, I'm going to show up to this playground, and I'm going to play in the playground by my rules because I value these rules. And maybe if I find that those rules don't work, I'll change them. But this is how I'm going to show up to the play. I'm gonna be direct. I'm gonna be honest. I will be courageous and vulnerable. Da, da. And then you see who else plays with you on that playground, and you allow them to either play or not. And if they don't play, then you keep moving forward. So oftentimes people are putting the emphasis on someone else, like why aren't they like this or why don't they do? It's like, hold on, Topaz, how are you showing up?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how am I showing up to this relationship? And I'm gonna keep practicing and showing up in the way that I think is the way I want to be in a relationship. And if it doesn't work with this person, it doesn't work with that person, at least I'm practicing showing up in the face of pain, of vulnerability, and practicing my courage, practicing my what I call emotional articulation. And I'm just going to continue doing that. And I believe, at least it's worked for me, that then the universe presents you with someone else who plays on the playground like you play on the playground. If you look at a playground full of kids, you know, you got... Yeah, I lived in New York for 18 years, and you go to the playgrounds, you walk by, and my friends, they hear the kids at the playground. You got so many kids running around, and some of them, they don't know each other. But after a while, they find each other.
Mm-hmm.
They find the clicks that work. And if the click doesn't work, they'll go somewhere else. The same thing could be said about dating. But we often forget, and we put it on the other person, and then we don't look at ourselves. How are we showing up?
Right.
Right. And I think that is, to me, what is really useful in the world of dating is like, it doesn't have to work with this person. What's more mm-hmm. important is how am I showing up? Am I showing up? Am I going to have integrity in this? Am I living cohesively in the way that I want to live? If this person doesn't play ball, that's fine. I'll play ball with whoever shows up next.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much my dating coaching advice. You know, it's like, take care of your side of the street and ask yourself, What are we doing to attract these kinds of people? How are we showing up in our conversations, in our relationships? Are we bringing our best? Are we bringing our authenticity? Are we saying the things that we want to say? And so many people are so afraid of not belonging that they spend so much time people pleasing and acting cool and not really being themselves. And so I really advocate for exactly what you said. So
I have good
dating advice.
I just had a new line that because in my diary, a lot of people have been dying and a lot of people are getting sick, like cancer and such. Maybe it's just the age, I'm not sure. But the thing that came up for me was, I wrote to myself, I was like, how do you show up for others? And how do you show up for yourself? It enables others to show up for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that was a learning for me, is like, I always show up for others, but they don't always show up for me. Well, why is that? Well, maybe it's because how am I showing up for myself?
Mm-hmm.
Am I letting them know what I need? And that's a form of showing up for yourself. So how you show up for yourself enables other people to show up for you.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting learning, that illumination that I spent time on last week.
Yeah, I like that a lot. My whole journey after my divorce was to start setting more boundaries, to start speaking up more, to let my children know what my priorities were in terms of what I will and won't do for them, what I want and expect from them in the house, as opposed to the way they were brought up with two parents who could not agree on anything. And so now we had separate households, and this is like, okay, this is me. This is me in alignment with my own values, and I need to ask for what I want. And It's not easy when you're not used to asking for what you want and when you're not even clear what it is that you want and need in order to function well in the world.
Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Amazon Music Unlimited. You can listen to over 70 million songs and thousands of playlists and stations. Plus, you can now stream your favorite podcasts like Last First Date Radio. You can listen to any song, anytime, anywhere, on any of your devices. Get Amazon Music Unlimited for free for 30 days. Just head on over to getamazonmusic.com/lastfirstdate to learn more and claim this offer.
One thing that I've learned from watching so many conversations, right? You know, I've spent so many hours in rooms and watching the content. The videos of people talking of all kinds, fathers and sons, grandparents, grandchildren, best friends, lovers, ex-lovers, people who are actually in the process of getting divorced. Amazing stuff. We've had the honor of really being witnesses to these beautiful moments, profound moments, light moments, fun moments. Okay. But one thing that hit me was the distinction between rules and values. And I think this is really helpful for when you're dating. When you're dating, you have a list. Okay. Well, I want somebody who, you know, is an investment banker. I want someone who's a doctor. I want someone who's travels a lot. I want someone who has, you know, no kids already or already has kids. Or I want these things. Okay, are those rules? Because rules constrain, or are those values? So, you know, for instance, those who like. Okay, let's take a very simple one. Religious, right? I have to marry a Jewish woman. I'm Jewish, so. She's got to be Jewish. Okay, wait. Or she has to be Catholic. Or she has to be Irish. Okay, well, hold on. Does she have to be Jewish or Catholic? Is that what connects you? Is that a rule? Or is that you really value what that culture offers, the education or the family, the importance of family and connection? What is it that, and if you put a rule and confuse a rule for a value, the rule can limit you, but values can ground you. So in the case of let's look at me, for example. For me, it was, my dad put a little pressure. He really wanted me to marry a Jewish woman, da, 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 da. And for me, that wasn't important. What was important was somebody who valued family, who valued the education of the children. And that was important to me, and that's what I looked for. And I know I didn't find a Jewish wife. She's not Jewish. But she has the values that I find very important, let's say, in Judaism, right? Or another. That is what I think is really helpful when you're dating, is when you make that list, be sure that that list is based on values and not rules, because rules can be constraining. Do you want somebody who's an investment banker, or do you want someone who really acknowledges and is financially responsible so that they support the passions of their family and supports the needs of the family? What's more important to you? Investment banker means you're only going to be looking for investment banker. The latter, the value of being responsible financially, is going to give you more opportunities.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes the universe is offering you things that you're saying, wait, no, 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 no. I want a Coca-Cola. I want a Coca-Cola. I want a Coca-Cola. But the universe is offering you orange juice. So the question is, are you thirsty? Do you really want Coca-Cola because you want Coca-Cola? Or do you want Coca-Cola because you're thirsty? If you're thirsty, well, orange juice is actually better for you. It's healthier. It's meeting the need, right? So make distinction between rules and values. Follow the values. Make sure you're not limiting yourself in rules.
Yeah. Oh my God. I love this conversation so much.
Yeah,
this is so much of the work I do as well. I mean, I look at people's lists and they'll say he has to be 6 feet tall. And I'm like, is that a value? Is that a character trait? Like, what's important about that to you? Well, I feel protected. Okay, so you're looking for somebody who can be protective. In what way? Well, how would that show up, right? And so it's like the education piece is a big one for people. He has to have a master's or higher. He has to be, intellectually stimulating. Okay, well, people can have no college degree and be incredibly intelligent. Mm-hmm. It's really more about a growth mindset. Does this person continue to learn and grow and educate themselves? You don't have to have 5 degrees to show that. In fact, there are a lot of people with high degrees who are not emotionally intelligent and intelligent in the ways Absolutely. That you really will connect. So there are a lot of books about rules. There are tons of them that I really despise. This is what I was talking to you before the show. There's a lot of bad dating advice out there that limits you to rules because people feel safe within rules. And I think they're constricting. I agree with you. I think they have you miss the people who should be in your life because you're looking for something else.
Can I share this with you? Let me know what you think. If this is, this falls in bad dating advice.
Sure.
Is about, well, you write a list, right? You're writing a list of, in my case, I would suggest writing a list of values. This has worked for me three times. And the key is, yeah, write a list. But what people miss is the key thing is it's not about writing the list. It's about the state you're in when you write the list, right? It's about writing. So if I asked you to write, you know, what's over here that's out of frame that you can't see, you don't know, you'll guess. The emotional state you'll be in when you're guessing what's there will feel differently than I'm asking you, what do you see here behind me? You will have a different sense. You'll be able to describe this in a much different way within a much different emotional state because you see it. It's there.
Right.
When we write our list, we're offering doing it from a space of what you want, desire. You don't know. Your emotional state is not confident. You don't know. It's not clear. Sometimes we do fall into these vortex and these moments of clarity where we see what it is. And when that happens, write the list down. And the list, in my opinion, should be what is, what values does this person hold? What values does this person not hold? And how do I feel in this relationship? And I say, I only learned that because this happened to me three times. And the first time I wrote what it is, but I didn't write what it's not. Then the second time I wrote what it is, and what it's not. And then that showed up, but I didn't write what, how I felt. So then the third time I wrote all three, and 3 months later I met my wife. Right. And in a very unexpected place in Mexico, in the Guadalajara, Mexico, where I was avoiding, literally I was avoiding Guadalajara, Mexico for years. I had films there. Now I'm going to another film festival and said, I avoided Guadalajara. And in the end, this is where I met my wife, in the totally unexpected place. And it came 3 months after, you know, I had this moment of clarity. It was like 10:30 at night. I don't know why. I just came home from seeing a film and I just felt, I just could see it. And I knew at this point, because I'd done it twice before and then other times for other things, you know, for work and things, but I just had like, it was almost like my third eye was on. And so instead of widening what I wanted and desired that I couldn't see, I saw it. And all I did was write down what I saw. And the emotional state I am when I'm writing what I see is confident. It's assured, right? And that signal to the universe, this is happening. I see this. And there's a confidence there. And then what do? You let go. You forget. You relax. And then you just trust. And the next thing you know, unexpectedly, the universe presents it to you. That's been my experience. That's what I suggest to people who are looking for their love.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I love that you found her without having any intention of finding her where you were because you were avoiding this place.
Right.
I mean, those stories actually are pretty common that love comes in a surprise package. Love comes when you have a felt sense of what it will feel like, not that long laundry list. And I think that, you know, I often think about what draws friendships together. So I had a party when I was 50, and I decided to bring all these people together from all different parts of my life.
Beautiful.
And sat them all down, and we talked about mother-daughter relationships and kind of the growing edge of a mother-daughter relationship and what it was like for them. And because I like to have these deep discussions with everybody.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating what came out. And I think, and there was a point to this. I was thinking about like all these people were very different, but there were qualities and values about each of these friends that made them my friend. All of them had some depth to them. All of them were creative in some way. All of them they were all active, growth-oriented people. And if you look at friendships, I think you can also find some of the values that you're looking for in a lifetime partner, because you want to have some of those friendship-based qualities that have attracted you to other people in your life.
Oh, absolutely. Birds of a feather flock together. That's what I mean by how are you playing on the playground? You will find, like, the act is play your game. And I don't mean by game. That's not right in the world, Danny. Play the game the way you value the play. Show up and be that. And then you will find the other people who play that way. You know? And then everyone else who isn't, it's just practice for you to play the way, play, to show up the way you want to show up. And then you will meet the person who shows up that way. And matter of fact, all the previous relationships that didn't work out were practice so that you could show up to this one. A great question we ask on the dating one is, what have you learned? Because we have a dating app. Right? We can even pull out a question from the dating card game. But one of them is, you know, what have you learned from the last experience that you're bringing to this one? Or another similar one is, what would your ex-partner warn me about dating you? Or what would my ex, what would your ex-partner, you know, tell me is great about dating you? You know, we are, we are, you know, we're all on the journey and we're growing. And the question is, how do we show up on the journey?
Yeah. I have clients ask, if your ex was sitting with us today, why would they say the relationship ended? And would you agree with them? So it's similar. I learned that from one of my podcast guests. And it's just kind of going in a different way. Most people will just say, how many times were you married? Who cares? Why'd you get divorced? And then people will go into a whole long laundry list of why they hate their ex-spouse. It just doesn't lead to a good conversation. But the learning is what's most important. You know, what are you looking for in the next relationship that you didn't have in this relationship?
Well, I mean, look, if I'm on a date and I ask someone why they got divorced and they tell me that all the reasons are because of their partner and everything's on their partner's feet, then I wouldn't date them.
Yes.
Because I see there's good information. There's no responsibility.
Right.
And like for me, what made one of the things that really moved me about my current partner, my wife, is responsibility, taking responsibility. How often are you in an argument with someone where it's really about them taking responsibility or you taking responsibility? And once someone takes responsibility, it's deflated. It's like, okay, thank you for acknowledging. Thank you for taking responsibility. Live and learn. We move on.
Yeah.
Sometimes we spend more time deflecting responsibility than taking it. And that's so what hinders us from moving forward.
So, so true. So let's talk a little bit about the questions. First of all, why 12?
Because it turned out that, I don't know why this ended up this way, but when we started, we just started with 12 questions for each participant. So there'd be 24. So each person would ask 12 questions. And we found that that structure really worked. And so we just apply that here because the question was, you know, in 10 years of doing this, what are the meat and potatoes? What are the go-to questions that really work and why? And that's what's outlined in the book. And, you know, and from the book, you can ask these questions. You can also ask the additional ones at the end of the book. But ultimately, what's key is, how do we create the spaces for us to hold each other in? And what I mean by that is, if you're going in any relationship, if you have some conflict or something, then you go to therapy. And the therapist is holding the space, they're the referee. But that's not necessarily giving the relationship the opportunity to build stronger muscles. And if you and your partner, you and your dating, whoever you're with, your best, your friend, your father, your brother, your sister, can hold the space together of discomfort and exploratory conversation, regardless of what is set, you guys are both holding the space for each other. And that is growth, is to create the space for us to explore each other. You know, and I have numerous people in my life who, as soon as they see the card games, they run because they don't want to have these conversations. But I think, which is fine, which is fair enough. But I think there's a loss of vitality. There's a loss of the passion. There's a loss of, we are human beings and we reflect each other to each other. And if we can't have the conversation, then we're missing that aspect of our lives. Which is fine. It's just a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not that someone needs to show up in a certain way. You know, oftentimes in a relationship, one person is more articulate and more effusive than the other. That's fine. They have different ways of communicating, but let's just sit in the space together. Let's just ask the question. Right.
Yeah.
It just illuminates the threads that connect us.
There's a story game from The Moth. Do you know about that one?
No, tell me. I know The Moth, but I don't know the story game.
Yeah, so it's story prompts like they do in the Moth itself. They have themes, so they'll have hundreds of cards that have that are based on a theme. So the theme might be freedom, or I don't know. So let's say it's freedom. Tell us about a time when you felt free. Tell us about a time when you felt constricted.
Right.
So I was trying to play this with one of my daughters, and she was like, there's no way I'm playing this game. It's just, I hate this. There's no way. You know, she felt very confronted by the game. So I drop it. You know, I never push anything on my kids anymore. I'm a little bit more enlightened.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love prompts. I love the questions. So let's go over a few of the questions.
Let's point out to that. Just that's a great game. Tell me about a time you did something courageous. Great. But that you'll answer that question no matter who's asking it.
Right.
But if your daughter asks you, when was the time you saw me do something courageous?
Mm-hmm.
We ask that question. Now we're pulling at the threads of our connection, of our relationship.
Yeah.
And that's what makes our questions and the questions in the book more powerful, because how often are you asking someone a question? Well, they'll just go off for a half an hour. And it's really about them and their own diatribe of whatever that is. And it doesn't involve you.
Right.
And it's nice to hear. But what I'm suggesting is ask questions that reflect our connection.
That's
when was the time
idea.
We were most courageous? Right. When was the time you saw me be most courageous or most vulnerable? When was the time you felt most inspired by something you did or I did? Right? Asking questions. Then, now, we're both invested because I know your answer is reflecting our connection and I'm part of that versus you just telling me how, you know, something you did courageous. It'd be interesting, but that just requires a lot more curiosity than asking a question that involves both of us.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
It becomes more of a dialogue than a monologue. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the others are really about telling stories, and it's not telling
no,
a story about
us. I love the Moth. I love the Moth. I love the Moth. I've loved the Moth for like, what, 20 years? How long have they been around? They're great.
At 25 years, I think they're celebrating now. Yeah. So like the question number five, what's the biggest challenge in our relationship right now? What do you think it is teaching us? It's a great question because you both have to think about what's a challenge and what are we learning? It's not just let's talk about something that's wrong with us. It's also the growth. And so I love that question.
Thank you.
Number four, what are you hesitant to ask me and why? Is great because there are so many things people are afraid to tell each other. And now you're creating this space.
Well, so what's interesting is the first two questions are about, it's when you play our card game, they're random. You mix them up and they come out and they work because they're random and the questions put you in a place and the card game itself creates a space. What works with these 12 questions, if you ask them in this order, is that there's a sequence. And when you have something on a sequence, it takes you on a journey. It's an architecture. And that architecture enables you to go deeper. Why? Because trust has been built. You've leaned into discomfort in different levels and you've kind of gone the practice. So the first three questions in this structure is that they explore the past. They explore what's unique about our synergy. Where was our love birthed from? And it reconnected us. Right. And again, this could be for not just romantic couples. Right. The next three questions that you mentioned, four and five, and then there's six, is about how we deal with conflicts. So what are you hesitant? This is something that's in the shadows that we don't talk about. We both know it. If we ask each other, I would be thinking, you know, Sandy, what are you hesitant to ask me? I'm thinking about what your answer is. You're thinking about what your answer is. And then are we going to discuss it? Maybe we have different thoughts. There's a lot of conversation around that. But this is things in the sides that we don't shed light on, that they're kind of where we're hesitant to talk about. Then it evolves into the next question is, what is our biggest challenge? Because sometimes the things we're hesitant to talk about, if we don't face them, if we don't talk about them, they become bigger, they grow until they become a really big challenge. People like to call them problems, but I say, no, it's a challenge. Just changing it from a problem or an issue to challenge means it's a challenge, which means on the flip side of challenge is achievement, success. And then the next question is, what is one thing that, you know, disappoint you that you, and that what is a sacrifice I've made that hasn't been acknowledged and why, right? Am I reading the
It's number seven is what's the pain in me you wish
No,
you could
that
heal
number
more?
six. What's number
Oh,
six?
six. What's the sacrifice you feel you've made that I haven't acknowledged, and why do you think that is?
So, if we don't face the challenge, sometimes one of us solves it and becomes something that we've sacrificed for the relationship, but maybe it's not acknowledged, and then it becomes there be that becomes an issue or resentment.
Yeah.
So those next three questions, four, five, and six, deal with how do we deal with conflict? Seven and eight are really the climax ones about our vulnerabilities, about our pain. Then we start to take nine and ten is about landing the plane. What are we learning from each other? Why am I grateful that you're here? Because regardless of everything we faced, you're still here and we're talking through it. What am I learning from you? What am I teaching you? What are you learning from me? What is the nature of the synergy of our relationship? And then the last two questions are things that we should acknowledge by virtue of that we don't have forever together. If this was our last conversation, what is one thing you never want me to forget? And then number 12 is why do you love me? And because we've gone on this journey from the past and our uniqueness to facing our challenges to the really the climax of our vulnerabilities and our mutual experiences that we've shared that are not so good, but that we've grown from, to our gratitude for each other, to this, why do you love me becomes so much more deeper and profound, even if you don't say anything, even if you say so much and you look them in the eye. Because you've gone on this journey, you've shared the space, you've held the space for each other. And I think that's, isn't that what a relationship is? Not just romantic, but any kind of relationship. And if we don't have those conversations, we're just missing the opportunity to mine those connections we have with all these other people in our lives, the ones who are closest to us, to reaffirm what it means to be human.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear the trajectory of the questions and why they fall out the way they do. My curiosity is, do most people ask all of these questions in at one time, or is this something that happens over time? How often do we ask these questions
Oh,
in a partnership?
well, people with the card games, because it's random, you can choose that people play once, one card a day, or every Sunday they'll take three cards, or they'll take as many that till they get, you could take three cards in the last 3 hours, who knows? The structure of the book, though, suggests no, this is a journey to go on to ask all 12 questions. You don't want to stop in the middle of the climax. What's the pain in me you wish you could heal and why? And then, oh, we got to go. No, you're stopping the surgery in the middle. You need to land the plane. You need to sew it up and heal it. So in the context of this book and these 12 questions, it is a journey to go on that you should complete. And if you have, and I have troubleshooting tips for the end of, if this happens or that happens, here's ways to solve it. Ultimately, I just look around the world. We're so good at talking, and we're not very well practiced at listening, and we're missing the opportunity to feel a sense of humanity between all of us. But we're not taught it. We don't get taught this. We model this by the things we see, and particularly our families, and then our friends and our culture, and then our media. No, we're not. So that's what the offering of the book is. And I guarantee you, if you go through the 12 questions, you will have a conversation that will change your relationship forever. Even one that you, oh, I know that person so well. Okay, you're going to have an incredible conversation that you're like, oh my God, I love them even more. We've articulated things that we've always felt but never said, and now we have, and then in some way has elevated our connection. Right. And I just look around of doing this for 10 years and seeing how it's changed people's lives by doing the and. By stepping in the place of all our productions that we've done, not to mention all the messages we get of people playing our card games, and I just know the value of this. So that's what's in the book. It's a distillation of everything we've learned.
That sounds incredibly valuable, and it would be wonderful if everybody had these conversations. What a world we would have. So let me ask you my final question, which is, what advice do you have for anyone who wants to go on their last first date? I ask this of everybody.
I go back to the thing about when that moment of clarity opens up for you and you are writing your values from a place of knowing, not wanting. Wanting means you don't have it. Knowing means you do. Don't take that window opening, that vortex opening, that moment of clarity for granted. Write down what I see, what you don't see, and how you feel. Write down as much exhaustive list you can, put it aside, relax, and walk the path, and the universe will present your partner.
Well, I actually have one more question. Said I didn't.
Let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah, no, I heard you say Danny before when you were talking to yourself. Was that a name you called
Danny?
yourself? I thought you said Danny.
Oh, no, no. No.
Did you change your name from your birth name?
No, no. Topaz is my birth name.
It is.
My brother is Sapphire, and I have a brother named Onyx. And my
hippie,
grandmother
dippy
was
parents.
Diamond. Yeah. They're not hippie, but they're not hippie. No. They're not jewelers. They just
interesting
name me, which is a beautiful gift.
Yeah.
Beautiful gift of a name.
Wow. Okay. Well, yeah, I was curious about that. Let's talk about how people can find you. I'm going to have all your links in the show notes, but if you can give maybe your website one link, that would be great.
Great. Theskindeep.com. And all social media is The Skin Deep. Just look us up. That's where all our experiences are at and our content. And love to hear what people think and if it moves them. And obviously the book is available everywhere. Amazon and ebook, audiobook. It's available anywhere you get your books.
Awesome. Well, thank you for enriching my life with this conversation. I
thank
really
you, Sandy.
Enjoyed it.
Sandy.
You made me think and feel, and that's what we all hope for. And so I hope that people really get a lot of value out of this conversation and go check out all your wonderful work. Thank you so
thank
much
you,
for what
Sandy.
you do in the world.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks everybody for listening. If you love our show, please give us a high rating on Apple Podcasts. And as always, here's to your last first date. If you are ready to get unstuck, gain new tools, become more empowered, and finally find your last first date, I'd love to talk to you. Fill out an application to be considered for a complimentary half-hour love breakthrough session at lastfirstdate.com/application.